As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. Today, it's time we shone a spotlight on Rangers ahead of their first major European showpiece final in 14 years.
And Gulacsi was missing it. There's Lundstrom! John Lundstrom with the goal!
I think if you win the Europa League, it might be cause for some of them to go, wait a minute, can I actually get this anywhere else?
You always had something at your feet to kick around, didn't matter what, as a toddler.
They will face Eintracht Frankfurt in the Europa League final on Wednesday night, and Rangers correspondent Jordan Campbell joins us from Seville to help us explore their journey back to this point, from Gerrard's foundations to Van Bronckhorst's tactical tightrope on this remarkable European campaign.
Yeah, but before we welcome Jordan onto the show, let's talk about Blackpool's Jake Daniels, Flo. I mean, it shouldn't be news at all in 2022, and it shouldn't be big news at all, but the world we live in means that it is. He's become the first British male professional footballer to come out as gay since Justin Fashanu. An inspiring moment for many, I'm sure, and I'm sure he will go on and inspire lots of people to do the same thing in the future. So Jake's the trailblazer, but like I say, it shouldn't be huge news in 2022, but it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it took a lot of people by surprise. I don't think many knew it was coming yesterday afternoon until probably about 4:30 when the Daily Mail classic leaked the story that was going to be broken on Sky Sports News. And so my friend texted me. So I just got home, got my phone out, was watching Sky Sports News on my phone, and they were doing like a Rangers preview for the Europa League final. I was like, okay, well, they're not teasing that it's coming up. So I feel like we've had these weird sort of almost scandalized, like a chase to find this, you know, first footballer since Justin Fashanu sort of story, which has always left quite a kind of nasty taste in the mouth, because it's not about the news. It's not about the scandal. It's about the person and who they are and them living as their true selves. So when the news came on at 5:00, I was just like blown away and really emotional. I was literally wiping away tears watching his interview. He's only 17, but he seems about 35. So wise. And so honest, and I hate saying the word brave, because it feels so patronizing.
I was about to say that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels patronizing, but it's really hard to think of any other word but brave to describe it, because it takes so much to do that in that environment. But I actually think what was really heartwarming was hearing the way that Blackpool had rallied around him, supported him, and given him the help we needed, and created an environment. And this is what I think Stonewall remarked on, and others, is that they created an environment in which he felt safe and comfortable, and that is the most important thing. more than anything, more than the fact that he came out, more than his sexuality, whatever, is that the fact that that club are fostering a really warm and welcoming environment for their players. I think that's fantastic. And credit to Blackpool and Stonewall for giving him the support. And I'm so excited for his future. I think it's really exciting, really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, 17, so he's got his whole career in front of him. So this is something that's there. It's out there for the entirety of his career, which, again, is something that we've never really seen before. So it's going to be great to see what happens in his career. And the reaction I saw everywhere was really, really positive, which is great to see. Even the cesspit that can be social media sometimes, everyone seemed to really be pleased for him and really wanted to back him. And that's great to see as well, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing. And I know he was asked about, is he worried about abuse that he might receive from the terraces? And he said, look, you know, I don't think it'll impact me because I don't really care. You know, I'm doing what I love. I'm living as my true self, and that's what's important to me. But like you, Dan, I'm really hopeful that the whole of football is gonna rally around this and show why there are lots of good people in this game, and hopefully he's going to be welcomed with open arms up and down the Football League when he's playing for Blackpool, because I am really hopeful of that, and I hope that's the case, because yeah, yesterday's reactions were so heartwarming and yeah, just really nice. We rarely get those kind of good news stories, do we, where you just see a lot of joy and love and happiness, and that was a real moment yesterday.
Let's welcome now Jordan Campbell, the Rangers writer for The Athletic. Sure, he's nervy ahead of Wednesday, but Jordan, let's talk about the trials and tribulations of your travel. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. 25 degrees here and it's 9 o'clock in the morning, so I already look like a lobster. So apart for that, it's good. But yeah, I travelled yesterday, so I actually went down to London on the Sunday just to try and beat the thousands and thousands who had booked up every flight, seemingly, for Glasgow and Edinburgh. And then, stayed there, flew from Luton to Malaga. And then I did actually naively just look at the map and think, well, Malaga looks pretty close to Seville, so that should be fine. But the issue was that me and some of the other reporters booked up to stay in Huelva, which is like an hour outside. So you actually have to like go the opposite direction on a train back to Cordoba and then get a 2.5 hour minibus journey to Huelva through past Seville. So yeah, I got here last night at 6 o'clock, so it was like maybe 12 hours, but it wasn't too bad. So it was nearly trains, planes and automobiles, but trains, planes and buses. So.
Wow. Right, Jordan, I'm going to let you describe your piece. Letters to Rangers players from those who know what it means. So you've been around their family and friends and people involved in their lives, the players, and heard from them. We're also going to hear from James Tavernier's mum throughout the course of this show. But yeah, just let us in for those who haven't read it.
I feel like I must have done this about 50 times to get the families on board, so I should be a master at it. But basically it was, you know, the idea is to get a family member for every player to write a letter to them. So just address it to them and just write about how proud they are and talk about the memories and the journey they've been on together from when they're kids all the way up. And then obviously, you know, just send them a message before the game to hopefully, you know, inspire them and help them look back on, you know, what they've been through to get here. Because for a lot of these players, most of them probably never dreamed that they would play in a European final. So to get here is, you know, probably the pinnacle of their career. So it was basically just a way to try and capture the emotion of it. So I think I got, you know, 13, 14 different people to contribute. So like the captain, James Tavernier's mum, and Scott Arfield's mum. I mean, the two of them were great. They could probably go through every day of their lives, you know, and tell you exactly what their son's been through for 20-odd years. So, you know, they were brilliant at just talking really candidly and openly about how they raised them pretty much on their own for a lot of their life, and just about growing up with football, always playing, and all the different memories about, you know, Arfield buying a £49 suit when he got promoted to the Falkirk team, and, you know, Tavernier, you know, his mum building a goals at the top of the hill at his back to get him started, and driving him down for Newcastle when he played with Leeds, even though they'd moved away, she would drive down three nights a week. You know, these are the things that probably people, you know, take for granted when they see players. They think it's always been a smooth journey, but unless you go to the very top straight away, then, you know, this is what it's like for a lot of players. It's you know, coming through like humble beginnings and working your way up. So, no, it was great. I got Lundstrom's sister, Jodie, and I got Barisic's brother, Dino, Fashion Sakala's coach, who actually introduced preaching to Zambian football. That would be his team talk. He calls Sakala Mr. Ferrari, so that's his new nickname. But no, it was great just to see how proud everybody is. Hopefully the letters convey, you know, that sort of bond they've got with everybody who spoke.
To James, or as everyone knows you, or when we were growing up, you were a mini Tav, and then you were went to big Tav because you're your little brother. I can always remember when we were in Bradford, you always had something at your feet to kick around, didn't matter what, as a toddler. You always wanted to play football. There was just me and you then, and you used to want to take free kicks like Beckham. So we used to have a garden that sloped upwards, and we used to make goals at the top of the garden. I used to make you practice at the box just so you got it perfect in the top corner every time. As a brother to your younger brother Marcus, you know, I could not wish for a better person to guide him. When Marcus was born, it was just me, you and Marcus, and the things that you helped out with, because obviously I'd been in hospital, but you're always there for him, whether it was looking after him, even changing his nappies when he was little. You did everything as an eight-year-old. So unfortunately, you had to grow up beyond your time. So both you boys have become mature, outstanding, you know, pillars of you know young men that I could only wish for any person to have the same with their children.
And how amazing has Rangers' journey to the final been? Because obviously, being in England, a lot of the press has focused around West Ham's route to the semis, but actually I feel like people have forgotten how impressive Rangers' route to Seville has been.
I mean, like, to beat the tournament favourites, Dortmund, and then in the semi-final, I think everybody, you know, agreed that Leipzig were the best team at the last four. And to go and beat them, you know, was just an unbelievable achievement again. But, you know, come the second leg of the semi-final against Leipzig, me and a lot of people I know went to Ibrox thinking Rangers are going to do this. Like, they'll turn that around from 1-0 down. And, you know, it's difficult to explain why there's such a belief when it comes to this tournament, because on paper you would look at that Leipzig team and say, you know, that's a pretty frightening team.
Well, they're a Champions League team, aren't they? They've obviously come down from the Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, it was only a couple of years ago they were in the quarter semi-finals, I think. So, I mean, these are top, top teams. Same with Dortmund. You know, like, Mats Hummels was a World Cup winner. All right, he's not at his peak anymore, but, I mean, he got completely torn to shreds. But I think it's the way that Rangers have got to this stage, because if you look 14 years ago when they got to the UEFA Cup final, you know, it was really a backs-to-the-wall sort of approach where Walter Smith would just set them up 5-4-1, it would be, you know,
defend for your lives, basically.
Defend for your life, that bit. Like, I think there was, you know, eight games to the final, and I think they maybe only scored in two of the games. It was like 0-0, 0-0, penalties, 1-0. You know, it would be like 1-0 in aggregate over two legs. It would be penalties. It was really, you know, if you wanted to compare how the two sides contrast, it's like the way they got past Fiorentina on penalties was just like, you know, a real slog, but it was just character and just that togetherness. But this team have just taken the game to teams, gone toe-to-toe with really top-class sides, which is really refreshing. I mean, Van Bronckhorst literally went 3-3 at the back against Leipzig. Like, it was sort of baffling to watch it. You're thinking, is this really Rangers we're watching? Because we've just not been accustomed to watching Scottish teams do that at this level. But I think that's because Rangers have now got athletes in their team who can do that. You know, last year I think the coach and staff realised they probably had hit a ceiling in terms of where they could get to. I think they needed a bit more power, but Bassey has been a revelation at the back. You know, he's a bit of a cheat code like Kyle Walker. I think I said that the other week, with his athleticism. And then John Lundstrom's obviously been, he's gone from like zero to hero, and obviously he's now got the Belinda Carlisle song after him, so that probably sums up this run is how is John Lundstrom, to be honest.
I mean, tell us though why, because I read your tactical piece on Van Bronckhorst, which I thought was brilliant, because I have felt a bit out the loop on what he's done with Gerrard's team since he came in. Do you feel like it's a Scottish football identity thing that there aren't that as many European managers working in that league. And to see someone like him come in and just kind of like rip up the textbook is just so unique.
I wouldn't want to do Gerrard a disservice, because he was, you know, he came in and took over a Rangers team that had lost to Progress Niederkorn in the first round of Europa League qualifying. That's only 2017, and 5 years later they're in the final of the competition. So that shows you just how dramatic it's been. But I mean, he took Rangers through four rounds of qualifying, two seasons back to back. I think it was the only team that had ever done that. Then got to the last 16 2 years in a row. So every single season it was another level of progress. I think this season Europa League had actually became a bit boring. The group stage was really, really boring until Van Bronckhorst came in. In his first game, it was sort of do or die against Sparta, whoever won was going to go through. So you were sort of sleepwalking your way through it. But, the difference is that Gerrard had a clear sort of, I think when he talks about his team, it was always very Rafa Benitez based around. I think that was what he took the most for Benitez, was about how to set up a team defensively, and especially in Europe, was, you know, don't let them play through the centre. So Rangers, like, you could literally, it's so easy to show you how they would play with Gerrard. It would be 4-3-2-1, and they would all move as a unit, side to side, side to side. And teams found it really difficult to break down. But I think the higher the level they got to, they found it difficult to hurt these teams. So I think what Van Bronckhorst has done is basically just loosened things up a bit. I think he's given them a bit more individual freedom. He's been more aggressive. That's a big difference, is that at Ibrox he's really gone, you know, he's gone for the jugular for the start. And it's no surprise, four knockout rounds in a row, they've been in the lead within 25 minutes. You know, Dortmund were 1-0 up, Braga, they were two goals in the first 4 minutes, so the second one was offside. Red Star were 3-0 down by half time. You know, the Ibrox factor has been massive. That shouldn't be downplayed, because that last week, you know, Ibrox is famous for its intimidating atmosphere.
Absolutely, yeah. Unbelievable.
But everybody I know, like, and I'm talking, you know, old fans here, like my granda, other people like this, have said, like, that's the best atmosphere. And my granda's got hearing aids, so we should take that into account as well. But he said that's the best atmosphere in like 50 years. So I think everybody sort of spoke about the Bayern Munich semi-final in 72 when they won the Cup Winners' Cup. But I think that was just incredible. And I think the players are feeding off that. So how that changes in the final remains to be seen. But I'm sure they're talking about maybe 20,000 Rangers fans getting tickets, because they've obviously found ways and means are growing the allocation. I think it'll be a different atmosphere, but it's been an incredible, incredible run. I still don't quite believe I'm at the final, to be honest. So,
Let's just talk a little bit about the best on earth. John Lundstrom, Flo touched on it, that you've done a piece on him. Someone that obviously English football fans will know well, absolute fantasy football legend at one stage, 4 million, down as a defender, getting loads of points every single week. Why did it take him a while to settle? Because he was a good player in that Sheffield United side that did well in their first season back up. Good signing for Rangers. Was a little bit sour with him with the Rangers fans as well at the start, but now he's got one of the best chants in the world and he's absolutely flying.
Oh, I think I said in my piece, like, you know, some players you could probably pick out a few. You know, you look at talk about Mark Noble, Declan Rice. You know, I don't know why, but you sort of feel like they suit West Ham, and there's like certain teams that certain players just suit, and I think outside, it's even the same for outsiders who haven't grown up and that being their team. But Lundstrom playing like this, to me, is exactly what an Ibrox crowd, you know, crowds appreciate different things, and the Ibrox crowd love nothing more than somebody who is full-blooded, a midfielder who goes all action, box to box, and, you know, galvanising figure, I think, in the last 3-4 months. But as you say, like, you know, it was a really sour start. I remember when he got sent off against Alishkert, in the playoff for the Europa League in the first leg, you know, and you're thinking Rangers are going to get put out here, they're not even going to qualify, you know. Two yellow cards, it was a really daft tackle in the halfway line when he was already on a booking, and, you know, he was walking off, Gerrard didn't even look at him. The fans were whistling him. I mean, I remember he was getting absolute torrents of abuse. Actually, it's probably worth you looking at my Twitter, because on deadline day in January when Aaron Ramsey was signing, the same day I ran a news line saying, you know, John Lundstrom won't be going out on loan, because there was rumours that he was maybe going to go back down to the Championship somewhere. And honestly, the replies like, oh, you've just ruined my day. Oh, what a joke. I couldn't wait to see the back of him. Literally, like, 50.
That was only
tweets.
What, January, did you say? So, yeah. Like 6 months
the
ago.
The last day of
five,
January, so not even
ago.
That.
Mad.
Yeah. I take it that champ was not happening.
That was not happening. No, that was not happening. But, you know, since he's came in the team with Gio, he's found this sort of hybrid role where he's allowed the team to go to a back three, and he drops back, because he actually grew up playing centre half for Everton, which I think a lot of people don't know. But then he can step into midfield and add that grit and energy that they need. So he's probably become one of the most important players. And honestly, I've never seen somebody with two feet like his. Honestly, he can just. I don't know if that was well known down in England. Maybe because he didn't have as much of the ball at Sheffield, but. Genuinely, you know, he's like if you watered down Steven Gerrard, you'd probably not be far off John Lundstrom, you know. That was always the thing with Gerrard. You looked at him and you thought, the one position he's not spent any money on in 3-4 years is midfield. And it was sort of weird being an all-action midfielder. You thought that would be the place where he would look to do it. And his midfielders are always played a bit reserved and, you know, had like quite tidy roles, but you know, Lundstrom's probably in that mould where he can tackle, he can run, he can ping it 60 yards, he can shoot for distance, you know, he can tackle. He's a jack of all trades, really, and I think, you know, we sort of lost that type of midfielder probably in the last, you know, 10, 20 years because everything's became so specialised. So, no, I think he's a breath of fresh air, really.
I don't want to take the shine away from your piece, Jordan, but I did see that Belinda Carlisle has done a video message for good luck for Rangers. So, you've got competition on that front.
Yeah. Well, I think we asked her if she would if she would say something, so she didn't say it to us, so I don't know what we've
Rude.
Done.
Rude! How could she?
Yeah, that's us. The song's cancelled.
Yeah, no one's allowed to sing it.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You actually played a year above yourself. You were the youngest, and obviously because unfortunately the coach's son was in the position that you played, we decided after one game that we needed a decent goalkeeper. So for the rest of the season, you were goalkeeper, you took free kicks, you took corners, you did everything. If you could have just played as one man in that team, you would have done that. And the times, like, I can remember, I used to help the mums doing the coffees and selling sweets to make money for the team and the sponsorship. And the dads would go round because it was on a right rough piece of ground, picking up anything that had been left by the kids the night before. And then one time I can remember when one of the dads came out with a blowtorch to actually de-ice the white lines because the actual ground was so hard and that and icy. You were lucky, you got picked up by quite a few teams at the time, but Leeds United came in eventually and you signed for Leeds United. First season with them, you nearly ruined it for yourself. You was always Jack the Lad, you were always like messing around at the back of the training session, always getting told off and stuff. And I can always remember, like, towards the back end of the season, we got brought into the porter cabins at Leeds United and the coach sitting you down saying, you better book your ideas up, you've got potential.
It's not a great question for me to have to ask, but do you think Steven Gerrard will be feeling a little bit of regret on Wednesday night?
Are you trying to get me into trouble here?
It's not, as a Villa fan, I don't really want to be asking the question. I'm sure you really enjoyed the mid-table battle at Villa Park against Crystal Palace on Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, why would you not want to leave Rangers for Aston Villa? You know.
Well, cut the steady.
but no, I think it, he wouldn't be human, would he, if he watched it, turns on the TV on Wednesday night and doesn't think, that's the team I built. Mm. You know, I brought in all those players. I got them, you know, for the first round of qualifying to group stage, for group stage to the last 16. You know, he built that team. So, you know, he deserves a big bit of credit, him and his coaching staff, for creating that team. But, yeah, I think, you know, obviously I think there'll be a bit of him that wishes he was still in charge. But he obviously knew there was that possibility of, you know, we're still in the competition when he left to go to Villa. So,
do you think it was a possibility under Gerrard? Do you think this would have happened under Gerrard? I know it's difficult to say.
You could have Pep Guardiola in charge, and probably most people wouldn't think that this was possible. So,
yeah, true.
You know, like, I don't think Endy in the wildest dreams would have thought it was Gerrard, and I don't think Endy thought it when Van Bronckhorst came in either, to be honest. It's just, after that Dortmund game, I think that was the moment where everybody thought, wait a minute, this is the first... You know, they've had great results, beat Porto, drew Benfica, beat Galatasaray, beat Feyenoord, you know, beat great teams the last 3-4 years, but it was never that mega, mega team where it's like a breakthrough moment. And that Dortmund game felt like something happened, you know, something changed the mentality. I think Ryan Kent said that in the media the other day, actually. He said, like, he says, after that game, we sort of thought, like, wait a minute, how seriously do we want to take going all the way here? So I think it was that sort of light bulb moment that if we can beat them, we can beat Emdy, really. But I think Gerrard's style, I don't know if it had a ceiling in Europe. Maybe it had, I don't know, it's hard to say, but the way they were playing obviously wasn't great in Europe at that point. But whether they'd have picked up, you know, who knows, it's difficult to say. But I think Van Bronckhorst, the changes he's made, has really allowed them to be a bit braver in Europe, and maybe actually realise that you don't need to sort of be so balanced at times. You can actually, they've actually got the players to take the game to teams like really aggressively. So I think that's probably the big difference in what has helped Rangers actually go that step further.
Jordan, I mentioned the fact that, you know, we're in London and in England, that the coverage has been dominated by West Ham's journey in the Europa League final, but only now I think people are kind of probably waking up to the fact that Rangers have got here, and it's such a historic moment for the club. So what do you think the broader significance would be if they did win on Wednesday night? And also with the fact, like Dan mentioned, that Gerrard left Rangers to come to the Premier League. I mean, it feels like Wednesday night could have a massive impact just in the size of that win for Rangers.
Touching on the Gerrard point, you know, everybody did say, could he go for Rangers to Liverpool? Is winning a league in Scotland enough? Is winning a treble enough? Is winning back-to-back leagues enough? No one actually thought, what if he wins a European trophy? So, I mean, I think if he'd have won the Europa League with Rangers, everybody would have said, that qualifies you, because that's such a monumental achievement. So there is that part of it where, if you're talking about whether it is a regret, maybe, you know, that's the sort of thing that could have propelled them straight there rather than having to take another move. But maybe Rangers have gone under the radar just because it's felt like, oh, it's got to come to an end now, surely, just because the budgets, you know, West Ham's budget dwarfs Rangers because of the TV money. But, you know, Rangers,
they couldn't do it.
Yeah, you know, Rangers is got a good history in European competition, and, you know, a massive stadium and a support that counts for a lot. So I think, like, people maybe underestimated them, which I think was probably naive given the last 4 years, how consistent they've been. You know, you don't beat that many teams and only lose maybe 6-7 games over 50-odd games in Europe if you're not a really formidable side. So, I think it's probably suited Rangers for the attention to be on West Ham. I'm just disappointed West Ham aren't in the final, because that'd have probably been a comfortable sort of 2-3-0 win. So, Roisin would have enjoyed that in the press box. But, I think for Scotland, like, for a team to win European trophy for the first time since we're talking Aberdeen here, aren't we? You know, 40 years. It'd be quite amazing. You know, people talk about it being once in a generation. Well, Rangers have got here twice in the last 14 years, and that's despite, you know, playing in the lower division for four of those years. So
that says a lot about the size of the club for me.
Yeah,
that does say a lot about
it's hard to really, you know, sum up in words, which is difficult when that's really my job. But you know, it really is to say, like, you know, if you're going for the bottom tier all the way up to winning the league, that was meant to be the journey, if you call it that. But like, you know, to then become European champions, no, it's not Champions League, but the Europa League is such a strong competition mm-hmm. that this is, it's genuinely incredible that they've managed to do this. Because this team felt like it was coming to the end of its cycle, and I think it's always felt a shame that they've only really got one trophy to show for it. They've also got the Scottish Cup at the weekend after that, and they can hopefully add to it then, but it felt like almost unfair that they didn't have something to be remembered by. So this is obviously the moment to go down as, you know, legends.
I should know this, because like you say, this is my job to know these things. If Rangers win it, do they qualify automatically for the group stage of the Champions League? Because that would be huge as well.
Yeah, they do. They qualify straight through. So that was why the league was so big this season, because Rangers' performances in Europe the last 4 years have been so good that it basically lifted Scotland's coefficient to the extent that they were in eighth place, and the winners of this league got straight into the Champions League. So it was like, everything's about the league. You need to just win the league, because basically the budget differential between Celtic and Rangers is decided by that. If you win the Champions League money and the other one doesn't, then you get the advantage. So losing the league to Celtic for being such a strong position was a massive blow, but to now sort of be able to get through the back door is incredible. I mean, I did a piece last week actually on the numbers that this European run's worth. And so it's €18 million so far on match fees and coefficient payments. You've then got 9 home games for the Champions League qualifiers all the way through to the semi-final. So you're talking about €1.5 million each with a sellout crowd, 50,000. You're talking nearly €15 million there. So you're over 30-odd million. Then you've got the TV market pool money. If you win the final, you get another €4 million. If you get to that puts you in the Super Cup, you get another 3.5. If you win that, you get another million. You're talking over €40 million. And then on top of that, if you win, you then get the Champions League, which is worth another €40 million. So
it'd be absolutely huge. I mean, that's good for Scottish football as well, isn't it? I know you might not like it, but you know, to have Celtic and Rangers both automatically there is brilliant.
You know, I don't know what Villa's TV money is, for example, but you're talking over €100 million, aren't you? You know,
yeah,
it's mental money. You know, Rangers' total revenue is €70 million, and the fans contribute more than any other major club probably in Europe, because they're so reliant on that because of the TV money. For winning the league in Scotland, I think you get 2.53 million. You know, it's so small, you know, really. By winning one group stage game in the Champions League, you win more money than you do for winning the Premiership. So, you know, this is what Rangers are fighting against. So, like, I think that's why there's always a sort of slight chip on the shoulder when, you know, when it comes to European competition and Scottish teams maybe struggle, it's like, well, they're really
what do you expect?
the hands tied behind their backs. Not because Rangers are a smaller, Celtic are a smaller club than West Ham, it's just that they're in a small country that have been outgrown. So I think it's massive for Rangers to do this despite all that, because I think people thought that was impossible. It had been made impossible. So but at the end of the day, football is still 11 players versus 11 players. So money doesn't come into it when it's a one-off game, does it?
And you talked about this team maybe coming towards the end of its cycle. What lies ahead for Giovanni Van Bronckhorst? Do you think he's going to stick around for a long time? Do you think he's going to get to refresh the squad? And are they now going to be a dominant force in the Europa League for the next few years, or maybe even Champions League?
I've won the Europa League and then go for the Champions League, that's it.
But it's natural step, natural progression.
Yeah, exactly. This is a difficult question to answer before Sunday, because the next two games will define how this season's remembered. Mm. They could still end this trophyless, and that would be a disaster, you know? As much as getting to the Europa League final is an amazing achievement, at Rangers, if you don't win anything and Celtic win two trophies, that's been a bad season. But if you win the Europa League and you win the Scottish Cup, then it goes down as one of the all-time great seasons. So it really is in the balance, and it's felt like that for so long now. It's felt like for months and months, everything is in the balance, because there's three trophies still on offer and you weren't sure how they were going to go in each one. So obviously they lost to Celtic at home and that killed the league. But, you know, they've kept going in Europe and they're in the final against Hearts after beating Celtic, which I think they showed great character to do. So, no, I think there's a bit, I think I'd say since Celtic beat Rangers 3-0 in February, I think there was a lot of people worrying about Van Bronckhorst. Was he right? Did he know how to set up a team as well as Gerrard? Was the organisation there? You know, I was watching it and I couldn't see quite a clear identity like I'd seen with Gerrard. It seemed a bit muddled at times. But since then, I think he's settled in a really clear vision of how he wants his team to play, and it is aggressive, high press, direct, and it's working for them. The last 3 months has been a big improvement. So I think there's a lot more confidence with Van Bronckhorst once he gets his own players in, and he's got a full summer to work with the squad. I think there's a confidence that you'll see an improvement, because that's what happened at Feyenoord. His first season, there was, you know, quite a few teething problems. Fans didn't like his style of play. Yeah, didn't like his style of play. And then the second season, he only made 3 signings. Goalkeeper and Steven Bergkvist in the right wing. But, I mean, for watching the games, it was a massive, massive, massive improvement. So I think Rangers fans will probably hope for the same. But, you know, you say about the end, coming to the end of the cycle, you know, McGregor's 40 out of contract. Davis is 37, I think, 38. And out of contract, Kent, Morelos and Aribo are in the last year of the contract. So there's a lot of big decisions to be made. But you look at the boy Alex Lowry, who's just come through, and he's just signed a new deal, a new long-term deal. I mean, I think that boy will go on to have a very good career. So, you know, there's a bit of optimism there that you've got a ready-made player to come into the midfield. I think what it would do is, see, for some of the English boys who are sort of 26, 27 now and thinking, oh, well, I'm going to hit, you know, Goldson actually is out of contract as well, and hasn't signed a new one. So, you know, you're like, well, maybe there's more money on offer in England, and maybe it's more attractive playing in the Premier League. But, you know, I think what you can say about all these players that have been here for so long now is that they all love the club now. They all have grown to enjoy living in Glasgow and appreciate the size of it. I think if you win the Europa League, it might be cause for some of them to go, wait a minute, can I actually get this anywhere else? I can go down and play bottom half Premier League, but
exactly, yeah.
Go play for Aston Villa, but
no, I'm not going for this Villa bashing.
We're
so close to the Champions League, so close.
Can I get the adulation that, you know, I won't say Villa, you know, like a club who's not got a lot of history, maybe, you know. I don't know who you'd pick, but I don't want to offend them. But see, a bottom half Premier League team who, you know, all they're offering really is, you know, sort of staying above water.
Yeah, mid-table.
I don't know if that
obscurity
will excite these players now after you've experienced this for 4 years.
Also, if you've been part of the journey of, you know, getting to the Europa League final, and then you are in the Champions League, you would want to see that through, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's the other argument is that they feel that they've then done everything, but as you say, the Champions League is the next thing that they've not
That's
done.
That's where everyone wants to play.
And I would rather be playing the Champions League than playing, you know, Southampton twice a year. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you said it, not me. Yeah, so
I was waiting for it to say Villa Park.
I'll say Villa Park. I mean, that's much more interesting. I think that's amazing. I mean, that's
I would agree, but I'm very biased.
But that's also what we always hear about as well when we talk about players, why they're not going to, for example, Arsenal. But, you know, they missed out on European football and they're heading back towards it in the Europa League, probably not the Champions League, sorry, producer Giannis. But, you know, we always talk about that being the real, you know, the lure, not the money, it's whether you can play in Europe. So Rangers have a massive opportunity to use that to their advantage as well, perhaps, this window, and say, we're in the Champions League. If you want to play Champions League football, you know, we might not be able to pay you 60 grand a week, but, you know, we can give you something pretty decent.
But we can pay you 30 and we can get you Champions League money, Champions League football. And I think people forget that football players are still, at the end of the day, kids who grew up wanting to play at the very top level. You know, not everything's about money. 30 grand a week, 25 grand a week, still a lot of money. Still live a very comfortable life. So, and as I say, Rangers can still be a stepping stone to get to, you know, the Premier League or get to La Liga or wherever it is, you know. So, I think it would be massive if they get the Champions League money. I think transformative, really, because that's the one thing they've needed to re-establish to really say that is us now, fully recovered as a club. We've re-healed after 2012, so 10 years on exactly almost. You know, I think that would be quite a fitting time to do it.
Before we let you go, let's get a prediction then. Tough game. We saw Frankfurt dispatch West Ham in the semi-finals relatively comfortably. In the end, what are you feeling?
I don't know, because they're such a conundrum, a bit like Rangers this season, where the league form's been pretty bad. Like, they've only won 7 games out of 23.
Come alive in Europe.
This year, yeah, but they've come alive in Europe. So, I don't know, I watched a bit of them and they obviously look good, you know. Get the left back who looks really good. And
yeah, Kostic.
Borre and Kamada look good. So, I think they'll score, but I also think Rangers will score. So, every single round has been high scoring over the aggregate game. So, I just kind of see it not being high scoring. I'm going to go 3-2, the same result as in 1972.
Well, Jordan, thanks ever so much for talking to us today. It's been a pleasure to have you on, and good luck. Good luck with your travels, and good luck with the game.
Yeah, enjoy it. Enjoy it.
I think with Rangers, you've gone through a lot of ups and downs with this team. You've grown as a person, a player, a man, a family man, beautiful wife and children. Can't wish for greater grandchildren or a partner that you have there, Melissa. You've been through big ups and downs with this team. You dream the biggest dreams for your children and you want them to be the best of what they can. So anything that comes along the way is a bonus, it's a plus. God willing, you know, you've had injuries, but you've come through. I mean, I remember when I knew you were poorly, the fans didn't know, and then you got rushed in to have the appendicitis surgery. And then you were back in stupid weeks afterwards playing games. And I think people forget with football players, you know, the niggles and stuff they get. Yeah, it's part of the job, but all the player wants to do, and then all I know that my sons want to do, is to be the best and give the best that they can and support the team that they have around them. Go out, do what you've got to do on Wednesday night. Be the role model to the children that look up to you as to where you used to be when you were at Leeds United, queuing up for Lee Boyers, Lucas Radebe's, your favourite player of all time, you know, autographs. Be that role model for children, and fingers crossed.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Still time for us to point listeners in the direction of some of the other great articles up on the site right now. Flo, what have you been reading?
Katie Wyatt, who is obviously part of the women's football team that I work with at The Athletic, she's written a brilliant piece about Jisoo Yeon, who has left Chelsea now. Her last game for Chelsea women was the FA Cup final on Sunday. And yeah, she has been a legend really in the WSL, one of the first players outside of England to play in the league. She's been so consistent, so good. And Katie's done a brilliant piece about her impact, about why she's thought of so highly, about the actual way in which she was signed, which is kind of interesting in itself. So yeah, definitely go and check that out. How about you, Dan?
I'm loving my WSL at the moment. Just in time for the season to finish. I was loving the WSL, really getting into it. I like the Mark Noble piece by Roshane Thomas Flo. I just think The Athletic does that really well, where they gather a bit. It's a bit like This Is Your Life, isn't it? Where they get people in from people's lives and people's career and talk about them, wax lyrical about them. And I just think what Mark Noble's done at West Ham probably won't be done that many times again in the modern game. So yeah, go and check that piece out if you haven't, because it's great to hear all the people that have been in Mark Noble's life talk about him. And great scenes at West Ham on Sunday, and I wish him all the best with whatever he does next.
And a final reminder from me that you can read every article we've mentioned and so much more by signing up to The Athletic. It's just £1 a month for the first 6 months. So head over to theathletic.com/footballpod to get started.
Thanks again to our guest Jordan Campbell for joining us today, and of course thank you to all of you for listening as well. Do get involved in the comments section, we'd love to hear your thoughts, and why not leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you've got the time. This was the Athletic Football Podcast. Mark Chapman is back on this feed on Thursday with the latest episode of the Business of Sport podcast, and we'll be back again next week too.
The Athletic.